Blog Talk Radio.
Another great night of Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we're on every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30. We've been running a couple replays because of the fact that I've been traveling quite a bit, and hopefully that'll settle down. So I'd like to welcome you to another show. We are, as we normally don't take questions, we'll see if we can take a couple questions at the end of the show today, as we've invited back our guest again to do part two of her interview because we ran out of time last time. We had so many great questions for her. So if you have any questions, we will take a couple callers. We have a tendency to go long on the interview, but we definitely want to give a couple people a chance to dial in today. So that's 646-716-9663. That's 646-716-9663. I'll just give you some quick coaching on this. Please do not call in for prophecy or guidance or readings. If you have practical questions as it relates to the book and how to actually put some of the stuff in the book into actual life, please call in with those questions. As always, if you want to find out about this show and other shows, go to our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, Pam, are you there?
Hi, yes. I'm Pam Latour, your co-host. How are you, Mark?
It's good to have you on the air with us. And missed you last week. I guess we ran a replay, and I kind of miss having a little Thursday night get-together. So
I know. It's
always
so,
good to hear from you.
These shows are so much fun. And, I have to say that I really appreciate this music that starts the show as well and that ends the show. You know, I remember when you played me a few of your favorites when we were trying to decide on what to start and end the show with, and we decided on that one. And I'm so glad we did because it's just such a lovely, upbeat, comforting song. And I just wanted to say that because the thought occurred to me when I was listening to it tonight.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if it comes out as loud as it does on my headset as it does out on the air, but I keep on trying to turn the volume down a little bit more each time because it seems like it's really, really loud when it starts.
No, it actually comes out fine. I think it stabilizes on the air.
That's perfect, yeah. So it's interesting because I think we have two opposite ends of the coin because I'm freezing my butt off, and I imagine down in Florida it's probably very comfortable right now.
Oh, it's dropped drastically. We're in the mid-70s now.
Wow. Well, I just came back. I was out in California for the weekend, and I was out in Monterey. And for the weekend and everything that I was out there, I've been out there 4 years in a row for the spiritual conference every year. And it surprised me this year because it normally is cold for California, but, boy, this time around you would have thought you were in the East Coast and in the New England area or something. It felt,
well,
I think,
it's
probably
true.
About
the whole
43.
Country is cold. Yeah, the whole country is cold except for Florida. We're
yeah.
Still in the mid-70s, and it's supposed to drop tonight, but then by mid-morning it goes back up again. So, yeah, we're really, really blessed. I mean, this place is like a paradise. I'm feeling grateful to be here.
That's great. So I'll let you go ahead and introduce our guests that we're so excited to have back again.
Absolutely. A few weeks ago, we did an interview with a woman named Tosha Silva. Tosha is an author, among many other things, but she's written a very popular book called Outrageous Openness, Letting the Divine Take the Lead, and recently a new book called Make Me Your Own, Poems to the Divine Beloved. Now, both of these books, I mean, we spoke to her a few weeks ago, and then we played that show last Thursday night as a replay, but I'm so happy to have her back with us tonight because there's so many more things that are yet to be discussed. So please help me welcome Tosha Silver to the show.
Hey,
thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Pam. Thanks, Mark. I'm happy to be back with you guys.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you on. It was funny, before we went on the air today, I was actually sharing with everybody that, you know, I had your book, and I actually gifted it to somebody, and lately I've been wanting to go back and reread it again, and I'm actually going to have to go out and buy it again. It was gifted to me the first time, and then I re-gifted it after I got done reading with it, you know, reading it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's just such an amazing book. So if you haven't had a chance to... for all the people that are listening, if you haven't had a chance to read this book, it doesn't matter if you come from a religious or a spiritual background. It's an absolutely incredible book that really pulls together a lot of different things. For a lot of it, gave me a lot of answers to all the years of studies that I've done with laws of attraction and creation and, you know, creating the nature of our reality and, you know, all these things that we've done with, you know, Abraham Hicks and flow dreaming and all that kind of stuff. So, just touched on so many different areas, so many different topics and stuff. So highly recommend the book. If anybody's looking for the links for any of the stuff that we're talking about, it's up on our website today. It's spiritualconnectionsradio.com. If you scroll down to the show, you'll see all the links for the book and the new book and stuff like that.
That's great.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. That's good. Tosha, why don't we start by giving the audience your website, so if while they're listening to the show they want to pull up the website get an idea as to what you're about and so they can call in and ask questions.
Sure. It's just my name. It's toshasilver.com.
And Tosha spelled T-O-S-H-A.
Right, and silver. Like the color.
Right. Okay, great. Thanks.
So I'm gonna go ahead, Pam, and I'm going to ask a couple of questions that we were kind of prepping before we got on the air because I know we have so many different things we want to cover today. So let's jump in right away. So the first thing we want to talk about is this whole idea of offering. So can you talk about what that is and what that looks like in real life?
Yeah. You know, this topic comes up a lot for me with people because, again, you know, you are mentioning the law of attraction and the Abraham Hicks work and, you know, the secret, a lot of these different focuses that are on manifesting. What happened, I think that what a lot of my work originally, I think we covered a little bit of this on the first interview, but a lot of my work originally came out of, I spent years talking to all these thousands of clients when I was still working as an astrologer, and people wanted to know their charts, but they also were starting to get very involved in this whole idea of how do I make the things happen that I want to have happen, and how do I manifest this, and how do I attract that, and how do I work with all this. And what I was starting to see in my own practice back when I did it in those days was this real level of frustration of people that were trying all the time. Oh, I'm really trying to manifest my financial goals. I'm really trying to, you know, have my business become more successful, or I'm trying to be a writer, all these trying. And the foundation of Outrageous Openness really presented itself partly in this idea that when you let the divine take the lead and it's not the ego mind leading, then trying isn't really the focus anymore. That's an operation that the ego is very entranced by, is I have to try harder, work harder, do harder. But the offering to the divine is simply that. It's almost like putting whatever the current focus is on a tray or in a basket and literally offering it over, which also means releasing the attachment and really saying, for example, I do this a lot with people with financial issues. In fact, I was just writing about this. I write a lot on Facebook. I think Mark is there on the author page I have on Facebook. I was just writing about finances this week because it's a topic that's on people's minds a lot. And someone wrote me, and she said, I was told by a marketer that I should be visualizing exactly the amount of money that I want to make and the number of clients I want, and then I should hammer people with offers and promotions and all of these things until I begin to drum up the kind of business that I want. Now, I'm reading this letter, and I'm thinking none of that is actually, from my perspective, ultimately working with the divine. That's all one way of approaching things. But to me, a completely different approach that's what would be in outrageous openness, is where you actually take the business and you say, okay, divine, from this moment on, this business now belongs to you. This is yours. You will guide the way. If you want certain connections to happen, you will open the way. If you want other connections not to happen, you will close those doors. Some people will come, some people will leave. You know the amount of money that I need to be comfortable. It's all very different than presenting a shopping list to the divine of this is what I want and this is what I'm going to hammer people with until I get it. And so that's to me one example of how the offering works. It's a completely different orientation than coming up with a list of the desires. It's actually saying everything that's needed is already known, and I'm giving this as a gift to the divine to be shown what its will is. And what's kind of amazing working that way is how profound the answers can be. The opportunities that arise, the doors that open, and the doors that shut, that sometimes you go, wow, why'd that shut? And then later you find out why, and you're like, oh, because this whole other thing is coming. And it's very different than the focus on how do I get what I want? How do I meet my goals? All of that. That's a long answer. Yes.
Yeah, that's a great answer, though. Would you say that the way that you approach it would actually change the chakra that you're functioning with, if that makes any sense?
That's a brilliant question, actually.
Because
it's 100%
true. Solar plexus is the will. So
yes.
Most people are using that yellow solar plexus to manifest things with their will.
That's exactly it.
How would you say it changes with your perception of it?
It changes completely, because I would say it is so tied to the chakras, and for all the hundreds of shows I think I've been on at this point, no one has ever brought the chakras up. So I'm really impressed, because it's such a big key to the whole thing. I think most people manifest not just from their power chakra, but they're so often in first and second in scarcity and fear and what if I don't get it, and I, you know, it's not just the will, it's like, oh, I'm in terror, bring it now, and, you know, there's a lot of mix of the lower three chakras, I think. To me, what happens is actually, not that there's anything wrong, of course, with the lower three chakras, but to me, it's what opens up the heart, not only the heart, but all the upper centers. And what begins to happen is the entire being is now open to receiving, as opposed to just my will is going to try to force this. It's a 180-degree different orientation. And it really, especially when you start to look at like the fifth, well, the sixth, the seventh, the upper centers, not just the heart, where you're actually inviting in the divine inspiration, not just like, oh, I'm inviting you in to help me get what I want, but I'm inviting you in so that what is highest for the planet, what's highest for everyone, what is the divine plan can actually unfold. And that's not a third chakra issue in my mind.
Right.
That's just
not
even
right
there. That's just not what it's about. It's a nice chakra, but it's not what it's about. So, yeah, at the core of it, it is shifting into a whole other deal where the upper centers that are about inspiration and enlightenment are involved.
Did I cut you off? Go ahead.
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
Not a problem at all. I was looking at the Facebook pages, and it looks like I found two of them. One of them has a really nice karma sign on it, which I thought was really neat.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
There's another one. And then there's another one that has like an icon on it. And I'm wondering, which of those is the one that you want people to follow you on?
You know, it's the one with I think it's a joke on a Visa card that says karma, it's everywhere you go. That's the real page.
Okay.
I think when you go onto, if we could put that link on your page, maybe. I think when you go there, it's called Tosha Silver 13, because
yeah, that's
for some reason
says,
there must
yeah
be all these other Tosha Silvers out there. But that's the page, and it's a fan page, and the other one is a friend page, and that one's full up, and I'm not writing there anymore.
Well, while I'm going to get actually update on the website right now while I do this. But while we're talking about it, do you want to talk about karma for a minute? You know, because there's some people who believe that there's no more karma, that it's been cleared by the hierarchy of light, and then there's other people say no, there's always karma. So what do you feel your feeling is regarding this topic?
Well, I view it. I guess I'm very influenced by Indian scripture, and you know, that was my background, and it's the background really that's the core of a lot of yogic traditions. And they would talk about prarabdha karma. It's P-A-R-A-B-D-H-A, I think, and it's basically this idea that person brings a certain amount of lessons that they come into this world with. Even great saints, even somebody that, you know, has moved into a state of incredible light still has the prarabdha karma. In fact, there's, you know, Ramana Maharshi, if people are familiar with him, he's a great non-dualist who, you know, saw the world from a state of complete oneness. He had cancer. And when people said to him, well, why don't you just, you know, blink your eyes and get rid of the cancer, he said, it's my prarabdha karma. If God wants to bring this to me, this is how I'll go. And it wasn't, I mean, he could have cleared it, but he saw that it was part of the script that he had come to do. And so to me, you know, I had an Indian guy once say to me, and I really liked it, he said, Americans, he said, don't get me wrong the way I say this, but it made me laugh when he said it because I think he was right. He goes, it's a very young country. So he said, we like very black and white answers in America. He said, you know, oh, it's all gone, or oh, it's all here. But, you know, he said in India, it's a very old country and everything is seen as both. So, the you know, to me, part of this is you work with offering everything to the divine, and the higher you raise your vibration, of course, the higher, the more light is constantly emanating from your being and from everything that you do. On the other hand, I really do believe this, everyone has prarabdha karma. Everybody has those things that we come in that are part of the agenda. And that the issue isn't that we walk around like Disneyland, but that we embrace the prarabdha karma with a lot of willingness and offering. See, I think that's sort of part of the thing I think that was happening back in the years when I was giving the readings day and night, is that people would say things like, well, now that I'm doing the secret, I don't have any karma. I create whatever I want. And I would say, that's insane. Are you getting every single thing you want? And what do you do when you don't get what you want? Are you upset? Are you detached? And they would say, you're right. I don't get everything I want. And sometimes I'm very upset by that. Because the Prarabdha karma really would say not all options are available at all moments to everybody. And it also even includes the karma of the country you're living in, the karma of, you know, it's so far beyond the personal idea of just I'm here and I'm holding a certain thought form, so I'm exempt from karma. So I think both things are true.
Yeah,
we have it, and you work with it with your mind according to, you know, your openness.
You know, yeah, I think what's interesting is I think a lot of spiritual teachers would teach over the centuries that that it's okay to have preferences, just not attachments.
Well, for sure. Yeah, I think preferences are completely different than karma. I think preferences just go with being in a human body, and everybody has them. Yeah,
there was some.
Are great.
I know you understand this because, you know, for the people who didn't catch the first show, you know, you come from 30 years of coaching and helping people with guidance and what would accumulate to probably more than 30,000 readings, which is absolutely incredible.
Which is scary. I have to, like, take that number off my website. Yeah.
So... When I was talking to a friend, and she was a psychic and a medium, and she was very, very good at it. And I used to ask her all the time. I'd say, how come you don't do this full time? I mean, you know, I've worked with tons and tons of psychics, and you do such a better job than pretty much most of them. And
are
she said, you know
me?
Why? Well, I wasn't going to go there. I was trying to keep your name hidden, but.
Don't you love when someone's talking about you, but they don't say your name, and you're going, huh, that's interesting. Anyway, go ahead.
It's like, wait,
but,
I know this story.
But my, my friend had said, you know, I don't do it because she felt that she was taking on too much karma.
Yeah.
So do you think it's possible as a spiritual teacher or as someone who gives psychic guidance that you could be creating karma with the fact that you're doing what you think you should be doing spiritually to help people?
I think first of all, it's interesting because I don't do any of it anymore. So I want to make that clear. because before I start getting, because every time I'm on the shows and people start talking to me like a reader, I'm like, I don't do this anymore. It's because otherwise I get 40 emails after the show going, can I get a session? But I would say,
is that because the karma was too big?
Well, here's what I think about it. If you want to head in this direction for a minute, I think it matters tremendously how you do it. And it ironically goes back to the issue of attachment. I think you pick up karmas based on your level of attachment. And this is true not just for readers. It's true for healers. It's true for, you know, people that consider themselves teachers, whatever that means. It's that if you're attached, this goes actually to the idea of doership that, you know, we all were talking about before the show started. If you're in that place of thinking you're the one, you're it, people need to follow what you're saying. If they don't, you know, it's your way or the highway. And there's really, there are healers and teachers and readers that are exactly like that, and they get quite upset when people don't follow their instructions, and they, you know, they think that they have the pure vision of truth. And I think you can absorb enormous karma that way because attachments magnetize that energy. That's how I see it. If you're in a state, to me, you can always tell the presence of the divine. This sounds so crazy to say, but it's really how I see it. You can always tell the presence of that light by the extreme detachment. You really don't care. You don't care. And it's not that you're not wanting to help. You deeply want to help, but you don't care. You actually don't care if anybody listens to what you say. So as soon as there's that grasping and there's that, oh, I've got to heal them, or, oh, I have to help them, from, and it's coming from that place of so much push and drive and torture, that's, to me, where the ego's coming in and it's absorbing the karma. But when there's that place of, like, let me be of service, use me, and anybody can hold that state, then it's surprisingly detached and ironically much more powerful, because everyone has the choice to take what works for them and leave the rest. That's why when people say, don't you want to change the world? I could care less. Are you kidding? I don't care about changing the world. That's not my job. I'm here to just, you know, say what seems useful.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe somebody else's karma is to change the world. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I think something very different happens when that's not the focus anymore and you're here just like, use me, make me useful. Does that make sense to either you?
Yeah, it does. And I think it's, you know, it's also really important to just look at it from the aspect of, you know, if you want to change the world, it just starts with you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and if you just hold a certain vibration, whoever's meant to find it is going to find it. Whereas that grasping of like, oh, how can I reach more and more people? How can I shift their minds? How can I do all this? How can I heal them? How can I help them? That, to me, is where the karma gets taken on. In a place of deep exhaustion and doership. That's actually the meaning of the doership, because the small self grabs the wheel and says, oh, you know, how can I do this? You know, I'm sure you see this with healers a lot. I have a friend who does a kind of energy channeling, and she's incredibly good. But she used to really, before somebody called her to work with her, she would be so overwhelmed with the desire to help them that she actually wasn't very helpful. She would completely be in the way. And so worried, would the session take, would it not take? And eventually she burned herself out on that. And she started to really offer the session over and say, okay, God, just start to use this. And this, because in a way what you're doing is you're allowing that person to have their karma too. See, that's the thing, is I think that that's a key to part of this, is like people have the dignity of their own karmas. And it's let me go fix it. So, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to come back and ask you a question in a minute, but let's go ahead and take a break now just so we don't have to it in a few minutes. Everybody, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we're on every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30. If you miss any part of the show or any of the shows, they're all available in the archives. And to find out more about the shows, the archives, and what's coming up, go to our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. If you have questions, we are going to take a couple callers to ask about stuff related to the topics we're talking about tonight. You can call 646-716-9663. And with that, you know, you had originally said this a few minutes ago, so I'm going to go back and ask you what it means, and, you know, because I know it's a big part of the book, and that is, what is doership?
Yeah. I think that it's where the small self, the ego mind, whatever you want to call that part, takes the wheel, so that the attachment to outcome is very strong. And, I mean, you can use that example of my friend who's the healer. It's like she had healing abilities, but the small self was so involved in saying, I need this session to work, I must help this person, blah, 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 that it actually not only got in the way of the session, but she was so exhausted the end of each one, she really had to, you know, stop for a few years. And then by the time she came back, she had that space. It's like the detachment creates space for the energy to come through. And that's the doership releases when it offering, you know, it basically is the corollary to offering. As soon as you say, let this really belong to you, divine, this is yours, I'm offering it to you. Do with it as you wish. Then you create the space for the energy really to emerge. And, you know, there's a story about that, too, in the book, in Outrageous Openness, where I talk about how sick I got when I was about 30, because by that point, I was enough of a lunatic. I'd already given, like, 10,000 readings. And I, in my 20s, giving all those readings, had a lot of doership. I was, you know, that feeling of like, oh, my God, I must help all these people, and I was available day and night, and I was kind of a crazy Capricorn. Then I got very, very sick, and I couldn't work at all for 3 years. And when I was that sick, one of the greatest things that happened was I got to see how quickly everybody moved on, found other readers. Everybody did just fine without my help. God had a million other ways to help them. And I swear I needed that lesson, because that sense of, oh, you just matter, and, oh, we can't live without you, and all the ways that the small self can get seduced into thinking it's so very important. All you need is really to be, oh, just sick for a few months and see how quickly you actually can be replaced. It's very liberating. And when I finally came back, you know, years later, 3 years later, and started to work again, it just was from a whole other place. It was like, wow, I'm not here to save everybody. Everybody is here to save themselves. I'm here to be of service in the ways that God shows me, but there's nobody to save.
Yeah, I was trying to think about like what that would look like in the right brain business world, and all I could think of is an ego-based workaholic.
Exactly. And it's so easy to be a spiritual healer or reader or teacher, whatever these things are, with that exact mentality. But just doing it in the New Age or spiritual world. And from that same place of the small self, got to make it happen. So the foundation to all of it is really the offering. And in fact, there's a really good MP3 on the website, on the ToshaSilver.com website, called Make Your Life an Offering. And that one is so good on this topic, because it just goes right. It's a solution to so many problems about thinking something belongs to the small self, and just how do you really give it over so that you're freed. It's a kind of prison that you get taken out of.
Mm-hmm. So what would 5 practical steps look like to move into that without having to go off and get sick and be pulled out and benched for a while?
Well, I think the first one is you actually can make a prayer about, you know, a lot of my work is really with prayer, even though I think I was mentioning this on the first call, I'm not religious per se, but in terms of spirit directly, that, you know, to me it's like there doesn't need to be an intermediary. There's that, both the books are really about how there's this immediacy with spirit. All it has to need is the barest invitation. So to me, the first step's really that whatever the issue is, whether it's a business or a healing practice or a relationship, whatever the topic is, you do a prayer of offering, and you say, okay, you know, whatever your own words are, but okay, God, from this moment on, I'm offering this to you so that you guide it as you wish. And that's, you know, there's a lot of versions of that are in Outrageous Openness. But it's that first step. That's the step that over and over and over is the door opener for so many things. You know, somebody called me last week and she just said, I just found out I'm being thrown out of my apartment. I have basically 7 days to find something else. And she was in a complete panic. And I was like, okay, the first step. You just offer it. The perfect place is picked. This is now the divine's problem. You're going to be shown the right steps to take. It's not passivity. You're offering it. And she called me 2 days later and just had the wildest story, and within 5 days was in a new place that was much better than the old place.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, if we were looking at laws of attraction, you know, we would say that part of that rule and laws of attraction would be to kind of, you know, put it out there, set the intention, let go of attachment to outcome. But at the same time, there's always this big equation of saying, well, listen, you can't just sit back and just wait for it to show up. You should probably, you know, contact a couple apartment searches and,
put your application out there.
Here's
the thing. Offering it to the divine, it's one of the biggest misconceptions. Offering it, and I'm not saying you have a misconception necessarily, offering it to the divine has nothing to do with passivity. It's offering. So part of the prayer is you're saying, guide the actions. Show me, open the doors that need to open, close the doors that need to close. I always, you know, my version of it is I'm often saying, you know, if I'm not meant to do such and such, stop me and guide my way and show me the actions to take. So I can never understand when it would happen on Facebook too. I'd be writing about offering and there was always somebody that would say, you don't expect me just to lay around in bed and offer it, do you? And I'm thinking, where did they get the bed from? It's like it's simply the invitation to the divine to say, come in. And I'd tell you the difference with law of attraction. Like someone will say to me, they'll say, well, how will the universe know what to bring if I don't have an intention of I need it to be light, I need it to have windows, I need this, I need that. How will the universe know? And I'm like, because once you've said I'm invoking the highest, I'm invoking the divine will. I mean, if you want to see all those things, it's not like it's bad. It's just utterly unnecessary. Once you get the hang of working like this, the divine, I'm always shocked. I never make lists about anything because the divine knows me inside out, and the things that come down to the tiniest detail, I'm like, how the heck did you know that I like that exact color, you know, fuchsia or whatever? It becomes so unnecessary because that's all. It's a good example of doership. It's a kind of spiritual doership. Oh, God might be confused if I don't make the following points clear that, you know, I like dating somebody who has artistic ability or something. It's like, how could the divine not know? If you have the intention, this is what I think is like someone says, well, you don't use intention. And I'll go, well, I do have an intention. I have only one intention. My intention is that the divine brings whatever its highest will is. And then you're covered.
It's a very strong intention.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I said I really like that. So I'm going to just let you continue because I knew you were kind of giving us a couple of examples of practice.
Oh, yeah. I think you asked me four or five. But I think I only have one. You know, here's a few other things. So you make the offering. And the offering is the prayer. It's really the invitation or an invocation. And I think people get scared, you know, like, oh, I'm going to do it wrong or what are the right words? And I think, you know, to me it's very different than all these, you know, programs that are out there that, you know, you have to say it a certain way. And, you know, you don't. This is like a love affair with you and the divine. To my mind, you say it in whatever way your heart wants to offer it. And then, you know, you probably remember the reference from Outrageous Openness. I use a God box a lot, and I think if something is a big problem, it's really helpful to have this box. Quite different than a manifestation board because you're not putting this thing in there and fixating on it and saying, I want it, I want it, I see it, I want it. You're just sticking it in the box, and when it comes up in the mind, you're saying, it's handled. God's already picked it.
I forget there's, I'm trying to think of who the author was that wrote it. She was a minister back in the early 50s. And one of the prayer processes that she taught, which I thought was more advanced than what I would say a lot of the dogma teachings of prayer, which is more about begging, I think.
Yeah, begging, that's true.
And I say that in the most respectful way, coming from a family of ministers.
No, I'm laughing. I'm thinking, yes, it's like the entire the entire focus on God is begging, coming to God as a beggar. Yes.
Yeah, it's like coming to him and just saying, please, please do this. If I, you know, if you do this, I'll be good. And, you know, if I'm good enough, then maybe, you know. But, you know, one of the things that was interesting in this prayer process that I was taught is that, you know, you basically, as you would give in this example, you just basically give it up to, in this situation, we use God, but, you know, we'll do the standard disclaimer for everybody listening. You can use Mother, Father, Earth, Universe, God, whatever works for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, with that, it was understanding that basically you just kind of give it up and say, listen, you know, and I did this a number of years ago with one of my businesses, and I said, you know what, I'm going to make God my CEO.
That's it.
And just you take the business, I'll work for you, and you just tell me what you want to do, and I'm going to let go of attachment to what I think the business needs to be. So in this prayer process that was taught from this woman, she said, yeah, what you do is you pray as though it exists already, and then you let go of attachment to outcome, and then you say thank you for it, because the assumption is that if you prayed for it, then it's already done. So there was that was kind of like the, you know, the new process of the way of looking at it.
Well, and it's interesting because I think it's related, but the piece I would add, and I think it's close, is that I also, part of offering it over is leaving room for that it's not the divine will. So I wouldn't just say, oh, yeah, I'm offering it over, and I'm saying now you'll do it the way, you know, you want to bring me what I want. I'd say once it's offered over, you're really saying, it now is in your hands. If this is the highest good, then yes. But who knows? The divine may have some whole other way to do it.
I know from earlier dream boards and affirmations and, you know, all types of task lists or letters of intention, you know, there's always that for my highest good and this or something better, you know, kind of left open, you know.
Yeah, I would just say it goes a little farther. How can I put this? I think what happens is that the energy shifts from seeing the divine as a worker for you. Like, how can I get God to do what I want through my lists and all these things? And it becomes, how can I serve this force of love? It's a completely different focus. And then you actually kind of start to find out that if you keep inviting in that force and say, I wish to serve you, strangely, it starts to send all these things to serve you.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's all.
Pam?
Did we lose her?
Let me just check. Sometimes if I don't have the screen up in front of me. Yeah, that's what happened. Hold on, Pam.
I wonder, too. I thought she was being really quiet.
There you go, Pam.
Hi. Hi. Sorry about that. Somebody
question,
called
Pam?
In on my phone, and it disconnected me. But I'm back.
Hi.
I have a few questions. If you don't mind, can I jump in here, Mark?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So my first question is for the audience members who haven't read the book, and I have to tell you that I've ordered the book, but I don't have it yet. Read the book. For those that have not read the book, how do you make the connection to the divine to begin with? Let's say, for example, and I know this seems like an elementary question for someone who has an ongoing relationship with themselves, with the divine, but for someone that is so used to bulldoze their way, really, by this law of attraction into the world, how would you suggest to the audience to begin moving in a different direction, creating a relationship with the divine?
Yeah, it's another really good question, because it's the whole first part of the book is so much about that, because to me, I think what I focus on a lot in the beginning of the book is almost do it as an experiment. You have nothing to lose. Right now, if somebody is coming from a place of it's their will hammering at the world, trying to get what they want, you could say, okay, I'm taking a week. And just for that week, I'm going to pretend that there's this force of love in the universe that deeply wishes to help me. And not just help me from the level of I'm going to give it a list of what I want and I'm going to, you know, force it to try to bring it, but that it actually really wants to support and love me and bring what's best. And so often for me, it's actually, I'll say this to people, I'll say, do it as an experiment. Do some of these very simple invitations, you know, like you're at a certain problem like my friend was with the housing, and you take that juncture and say, okay, look, you have nothing to lose. Call in the divine, offer this over, you know, stick it in a God box. Do some of these things just like an experiment. And if, you know, if it doesn't work, and then fine, then you can just go, well, you know, I heard this crazy spiritual person on the radio and it didn't work and now I'm on to something else. But what happens over and over, I find, because I get a lot of letters like this, I love the letters from cynics, because they'll say, I really made fun of your book, my girlfriend had it, I thought it was really woo-woo and dopey, and then I did some of it, and all these things began to occur. So I don't really try to convince people, I just say, try it as an experiment.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay. So,
you know, yeah.
Let's carry this a little bit further. It kind of goes toward expectations of what you think your life should be, and it relates to the story of your life. And I think a lot of people look at their story, and it doesn't meet their own standards.
Mm-hmm.
So they start feeling depressed. They start pushing harder to make themselves into how they feel they should be successful, which just generates more crap, excuse me.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of reminds me, when I lived in the Middle East, I would come home here and I would visit family. And a lot of my family members, I'd be on the phone with them in the Middle East, and they would be so open and so sweet and so wonderful and seem to be interested in my life. And I would come back here on vacation or something, and that interest melted away very quickly, and I would be disappointed. And my husband would always say, look, the only reason you're disappointed is because you expected them to be something
mm-hmm.
that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't expect it, you wouldn't be disappointed. And it seems like that's also what you're saying, that the expectation is an attachment to the outcome.
Yeah.
And Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I do, because it actually all circles back to offering again. It's kind of this great solution to a lot of different issues, because let's say, I'll give you an example of, I know somebody who was, she was in a marriage for quite some time that really was making her unhappy. But she couldn't get herself to leave it, and she couldn't get herself to really be happy in it. And so we started doing this thing, and I said, you know, just start offering the marriage over. Write the person's name, stick it in your God box, you know, start to say everything about this relationship now belongs to you, God. If you want me to stay here, I'll stay here. If you want me to leave because you have a better plan, give me the courage to go. And she did this for about 3 months. And then basically she pretty quickly, within those 3 months, got guided to leave. And she finally had the courage to do it. So it wasn't like what she needed to do was just have fewer and fewer expectations of her husband and then it all would be good. She really got guided to leave. Now, somebody in another situation, it might have been to learn to accept the person more. And to have, you know, fewer expectations and be less demanding, and that it actually was a great relationship, but they were being too demanding and they needed to stay. But I think it's once it's actually offered over, and you really, it's that fundamental illusion that whether it's a relationship or even our lives. That's how I would see it. Even the idea that the life belongs to the small self is an enormous burden. So that thing that you were talking about of somebody who says, well, you know, I should be more and I should be this and I should be that. Yes, those are all human things to think, but they're coming out of the small self believing that it owns the life. And as soon as you move into the offering and you're saying, I'll give you another example. I work with somebody who is a really talented filmmaker, and she's always looking around and looking at other filmmakers, even though she's very talented herself, and she's going, oh, I should be making something better, and no matter what I make, it's not good enough, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's the same topic. It's like once she takes the filmmaking and says, this is yours, God, use me. This is yours. Use me the way you want. Let me make the movies that you wish me to make. Let me offer these to you. Then it almost doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. It really removes you from all that jealousy and all of that victimization. It puts you right into the center of your own life and says, I'm here offering myself to the divine. Use me as a vehicle. And no matter what the person does, whether they're, you know, a stay-at-home parent or they're a CEO or they're an artist, any action can be done that way. And it's just really freeing.
Wonderful. That's lovely. Now, I have a question about karma that you and Mark were talking about earlier. Because if I understood you correctly, what you said was that karma has a direct relationship to your level of attachment. In other words, the more you're attached to things, the more karma you have.
I think that's true.
Okay. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but that's what I got from it.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I see it. I don't want to put this out like I'm speaking the gospel of all truth, but I would say that's actually the core of the Bhagavad Gita, too, and a lot of the scriptures from India, is that when they'll talk about you can do the action, but you don't get the fruit of the action, that's what they mean, is that the fruit is offered to God, and the action then becomes free of karmic consequences because you're now saying it's yours. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. The fruit is God's.
I love it. So does that also mean, reverse engineering this statement, that by releasing your levels of attachment, you also release karma?
I think so. I do. I do, because, you know, it's kind of funny. Like, I just figure I guess everybody has their different motivations. I personally don't sit around a lot and go, I'm doing this in order to have less karma. I'm doing this because I want the divine to run my life, because when I try running it, I create complete chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I really created a lot of chaos in my 20s and 30s until I figured some of this out. So it just changes the entire orientation, because you're inviting a force of love to guide the way and to carry the burden. I love what, you know, I love just the statement about casting the burden, and that even so much of law of attraction and so much of the focus on manifesting, there's a burden for most people. I can't say, maybe there's people that do it in some way that's not burdensome. Most people I worked with, the burden of trying to get what they thought they wanted was nearly overwhelming them.
Okay.
It's quite different.
Because, you know, there is a level of energy connected to things like money, for example. And oftentimes, from my perspective, when you're trying to generate large amounts of money, as an example, you're asking for a huge amount of energy. And oftentimes, the reason you haven't created this so far is because you've also got beliefs that counter this money coming in. For example, people that have money have taken it from someone else or are not very compassionate or empathetic, as an example. So you've
yeah.
got that belief, but yet you're asking for a large amount of money.
But wait,
go ahead.
Because there's another piece even past that, because I would agree with you that some of it is, you know, people have definite belief systems like money's bad or it's the root of evil or blah, blah, blah. That's all true. But I would say it's even past that, that this whole focus on letting the divine take the lead eventually moves you out of a place of trying to manifest X amount of dollars. You stop trying to do anything. Yeah. Because you're really saying...
That was an example.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because you're kind of saying, let's say on even a business issue, you're already saying the perfect amount is picked.
Okay. I love it.
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I think we're pretty much finished again, which is amazing
no.
how quick the hour goes. I want to just close out with one final question for you. And that is, what do you think is the biggest, you know, you do get all this feedback from all these people who read your book, and you probably have a common thread. You know, for the person who reads your book, if you were looking at 1 million people have read it, and, you know, half of them basically are left with this feeling of, well, I read the book and I'm just not getting results. What do you think is the number one thing that you want to say to them as far as what is it that they need to look at?
Well, I'll tell you, I would say, now, who knows, because maybe it's a cross-section of who writes me.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who write me, and I get a lot of letters every week, most people who are writing are saying something dramatically has changed in my brain as a result
mm-hmm.
of this approach. Sometimes it doesn't happen on the first reading, I have to say that, because I think it's so absolutely counter to how the culture teaches people to think. It's a culture of push, push, do, do, get, get. And in that sense, law of attraction and all those things fit directly into the kind of culture we have, which is why I think they became so popular. This is an approach that is so much about opening to receive and allowing a higher plan to come in that it takes for some people 2 or 3 times going through it. But eventually, what those people are often saying is that it's something they knew in their hearts was true, like sometimes when they were much younger, and they forgot, or they knew, you know, it's like their heart knew it. I hear that all the time, Mark. It's so funny. They'll just say, I forgot. I thought that, you know, I had to chase all this stuff. I forgot that, you know, there is this energy available.
Mm. So it sounds like the answer to a lot of questions out there is basically go back and reread the book again, because it is something that really is, you know, something you have to look at a couple times, because, you know, it isn't an easy concept because it goes so much against everything we've learned so far in life.
I think that's right. And it happens for some people, they read it, but then, you know, it's also on iTunes and Amazon. It's on an audiobook.
Yeah,
I
just pulled your book down from Kindle.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead and give out
Kindle,
your website.
It's toshasilver.com. And they'll see the book. It's in paper. It's in Kindle. But for some people, it's the audio is the one that really kind of puts on the click in their brain.
I didn't know
right.
there was audio. I'm going to go get that one. I love audio books.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say is the audio book, I think, especially for people like you, like there's some people they just know that's their mode. It takes it into a whole other place, and it kind of bypasses the critic and the mind getting in the way.
Well, thank you for everything, and as always, to have you on. Thank you, Pamela, and we are in the last minute, and I want to say goodnight to everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
you guys
Tosha.
Are fabulous. That was the world's fastest hour.
All right, good night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.